Hi, welcome to another episode of Critical Q&A. This is the third episode of this show where I answer your questions that you've been leaving in the comments section of my videos. I've been collecting a ton of questions. You guys have been great at asking me things. So no shortage of material here. And I'm sorry that I didn't get one of these done last week. I've been trying to get one done a week. Last week I did a two-hour talk on the subject of Scientology to my first group of non-Scientologists that I've ever spoken to about the subject, and it went over really well, and there's been a lot of views on it here on my channel, so clearly it's been pretty popular. And I will actually be doing more of those. I've actually got a couple more scheduled to do in the coming months, which I'm very excited about, and I'm certainly willing to do more of those kind of talks. In other areas, so that's kind of fun. But also, I have been sick as a dog for the last couple weeks, and so last week I just did not have the energy to do this as well as do that presentation, and so I was just laid up. It was pretty bad. But I'm getting back onto this now, so we're going to get started, and I've got some questions to answer, so here we go. Dylan McDiver, why just England, just Italy? Other than those are the epicenters of Catholicism in the Anglican churches. What about India and Central Asia and China? All right, so I assume you mean why is there no Scientology in areas like India and Central Asia and China, and why does Scientology just concentrate in England or Italy or these other areas like the United States? Because it is a U.S.-based religion. And the reason for that is because there isn't really money to be made in China or India or Southeast Asia. They do have, they have been working in some areas of Southeast Asia, but they actually can't get into China. The Chinese government will not let Scientology go anywhere near their people, which is probably one of the few moves the Chinese government's ever made that I would fully agree with. That I know of China. I'm no expert in that area. But anyway, I'm just saying that they won't let Scientology into China. In the 1980s, they briefly let Dianetics be sold in a Chinese version of Dianetics was being sold in China, and then they cut that off. They wouldn't let that happen. And of course, the way the church PR'd that to Scientologists was because Dianetics was bringing freedom to the people, and you know the government didn't want that. I don't know the real reasons for that, but I do know that the lack of concentration of Scientology in that area of the world pretty much would be because of the lack of ability to get money out of those regions and popularity. I mean, it's not popular. When the volunteer ministers went into India, for example, from what I heard, they couldn't even have crosses on their shirts. I mean, there's religious issues there, and Indian people and some of the Southeast Asian areas take their religion very seriously, and they don't want Scientology intruding on that. That's what I understand. Musketeer 86. Can't we put together a petition to have their religious status revoked? I mean, the IRS gave it to them, so they have it within their power to take it away? Absolutely. There is no reason why, and in fact, I just signed a petition the other day. There can be as many petitions as we want to put together on this. I know a petition was put together to specifically get the IRS to revoke the Church of Scientology's tax-exempt status, and I think the more the merrier. I think the more of those that are put together, the better chance that we have of the IRS taking a look at that. So, yes, please. Amanda Burke. Chris, thank you so much for being open and honest. I thoroughly enjoy your videos. How far up the bridge did you get? How far up the bridge do most Sea Org members achieve? And high-ranking officials like David Miscavige? Okay, so I personally, as I've said before, got up to the state of clear, and then I had that state taken away from me. And in fact, I had, during the time that I was in the Sea Org, I had all the steps taken away from me. So, and I was not unique for that. It's not like I did something wrong, and so they took it away from me. They were doing that to everybody. So the irony about my experience in Scientology and many other people, as far as I can tell, is that after 27 years, I was at the same place at the end of those 27 years on their bridge as I was at the very beginning of my experience with Scientology. And if that is not the definition of a scam, I don't know what is. So, as far as other Sea Org members go, and getting them up the bridge and that sort of thing, the Bridge to Total Freedom steps of Scientology, very few Sea Org members make it anywhere on the bridge. That's just a fact. I was in for 17 years. I didn't make one step of progress that entire time. In fact, I made negative progress. I saw that all around me all the time. Sea Org members get study time. They get time where they're supposed to be doing study and supposed to be doing auditing, spiritual counseling. And what they do with that mostly is training for their jobs, what they call hatting. And in the Sea Org and Scientology, your post or your job is called your hat. And so the training you get is called hatting, Scientology lingo. And so they spend months, years doing hatting for their posts. Very few Sea Org members, unless they get an inheritance or they get some money somehow and they pay for it, which I did see a couple times, very, very little do they get actual counseling, actual auditing, up the bridge to total freedom. I can literally count on one hand the number of people I saw in the Sea Org move up to clear and OT while they were in the Sea Org. It's pathetic. It is really sad. The people who are working the hardest, who are doing the most to get Scientology delivered to the rest of the world, are the ones who get it the least. And this was a major issue when I still believed in Scientology as to why I left the Sea Org. Because I could see after 17 years I had made zero progress, negative progress. And the way it was going, I was going to continue to make no progress. Why would I do that? Why would I continue to do that after those many years? And that was one of the reasons that I left. Of course, then I found out Scientology was all a scam and didn't want to have anything more to do with it. But that when I left, I didn't know that. So, as far as David Miscavige goes, I don't know for sure. What I've heard, what I've read, is that he got up to the level of OT7 and quit, stop doing it, doesn't do it now. I don't know if that's true or not. It would make sense with what I know about the man that he is not moving, because I don't personally believe that he thinks that it's real. I don't think he believes in Scientology. I have no reason to think that he does, because he doesn't practice it, he doesn't follow it, he just uses it as something to further aggrandize himself. And if you actually read what Scientology is all about, that's not really what it's for. So there you go. George JMH. If it's supposed to be a religion, who or what do they actually worship? Do they pray to anything or anyone? Well, no, it's not that kind of religion. I think pretty much similarly if you were going to make real world comparisons to real world religions, I don't believe Buddhism prays to anyone or anything. I don't know that pagans, I'm not an expert on pagan mythology or Wicca. I don't know if they have gods particularly that they pray to or not, but Scientology doesn't. I mean, for sure, there's no god in Scientology that anybody's praying to. Unless it's either the god of money or themselves. They pray, Scientology is all about, what I mean by that is Scientology is all about satisfying one's own ego. And that's about the only thing that's really worshipped in Scientology in any practical sense is the self, is yourself. Spike Robinson. To what extent do you think Hubbard intended actual harm? Do you think, as some folks do, that he was actively trying to harm people in order to get his name hammered into history? Did he write those TRs to create double binds and psychological traps? I don't know that Hubbard intended actual harm. I don't think that in all the years that Hubbard was doing what he was doing, I don't think he intended to hurt people. I think in terms of his followers, he definitely intended to hurt his critics. No question about that. Hubbard hated criticism with a passion. It was his biggest weakness. And he despised critics, and he did everything he could to deliver and inflict as much harm to them as he could. But as far as his followers go, I don't personally believe that Hubbard intended to hurt people. Did he put psychological traps into the technology? Yeah, he did. I think he put that in there in order to keep people fooled. I think he put that in there in order to keep them in the mental mind warp necessary to continue to believe what he was saying. And like Lawrence Wright and Alex Gibney make a point of in the documentary, in the Going Clear documentary that's coming out, Scientology was Hubbard's alter ego. When you see the body of the techniques and methods of Scientology and the steps that Hubbard made people go through, what you're seeing is, I believe, is the steps that Hubbard felt he needed to take in order to handle or cure himself. And he projected that on his followers, on the rest of the world, on everybody. Everybody had to do what he had to do because he saw himself as some sort of savior and some sort of everyman, and that's how he was doing his gig. And I have no question whatsoever that maybe in the beginning Hubbard knew it was a con. I can't really tell. I don't know. There's conflicting information for me on that. But very certainly, by the end of the road, he absolutely believed that the technology, the auditing and the things he was doing and the body thetans and the auditing and all of that, he absolutely believed in that. That was not something he thought was a con. He really thought that was his problem, and he died thinking he hadn't solved it and thinking he was a failure according to all the data that we have. So that's kind of my answer on that. Monty Ollie, love your channel. I have a couple of questions. One, if the CFS were to rescind the disconnection policy, how would that square with the tech? Doesn't the tech specifically say PTSs and SPs hurt your case? If you associate with your anti-Scientology family, you are hurting your case. It seems to me like it's a core part of the doctrine. It would be like Christians ditching the Ten Commandments. Two, do you ever worry about getting caught up in another cult? I was raised in a cult, and I find that I have the type of personality that really latches onto things and gets quite evangelical about it. I am as dogmatic now about my anti-theism as I ever was about my theism. I wonder how other former cult members feel about their own natures and how they might get sucked into another cult someday. Okay, so question number one, as far as disconnection, yes, there is technology in Scientology that's written up on disconnection and why it's important. I think all of that was really just sort of justification for having a disconnection policy, for having a shunning policy. I think Hubbard was using disconnection and shunning in order to hurt his critics and hurt people who disagreed with him, and I think he came up with reasons why and justifications for why disconnection was necessary, and he built that, wrote that into the technology, and you'll still see people to this day, even former members, justify the use of disconnection through because of what Hubbard wrote, as far as the technology of it. I don't believe any of that. I think that disconnection is an evil, toxic practice, and there is no place for it in a civilized society. That's what I think. So that's that question. As to getting caught up in another cult, I picked up critical thinking and skepticism specifically because I didn't want to get into another cult. I knew I had been involved in a cult, and I knew I did not ever want to get trapped in or stuck in another system of belief ever again. And that's why I think skepticism as a philosophy is so awesome. Because the first and three most important words out of your mouth as a skeptic, from my understanding of it, are, I don't know. And it's totally okay to not know something. And to me, that's just wonderful. It's brilliant. Scientology, bills itself as the science of certainty, that knowing how to know is what Hubbard defined Scientology as. So it's all about knowing. And there's nothing wrong with knowing something, but there's certainly something wrong with a trumped up knowledge of something. There's certainly wrong with thinking you know something when you don't, or when you have facts or evidence that disproves what you think you know. You don't get to just pick and choose and cherry pick your facts. That's not how science works. That's not how truth works. You know, if you want to start talking about truth, truth has to be something that encompasses all of the facts, all of the evidence. And you can't have a knowingness about something if you're denying, you know, if you have fact A, B, and C. You can't deny fact C and go, well, you know, fact A and fact B, I got those, so I'm all good. You know, that doesn't work. And there's way too many fields of knowledge, and certainly too many fields of belief that fall into that trumped up knowingness and trumped up knowledge. I don't like that, and that's what I didn't want to get caught up in again, which is why I embraced critical thinking and skepticism. So, and that's why I'm also, you know, I'm not an atheist. I'm not an anythingist, really, except I think the label I've chosen to apply to myself at this point is agnostic. Because as far as I'm concerned, we don't know anything about God or the afterlife or, you know, spirituality. It's a belief. Anything anybody's going to say about this is simply a belief. You can believe anything you want. And I'm not going to debate a person's beliefs with them, because it's a useless activity to do that. Person's beliefs are what they choose to believe. I don't feel compelled to argue with people about their beliefs. I don't feel compelled to make people wrong for their beliefs. In fact, I think that's the ultimate in futility. I think that everybody has a right to believe whatever they want to believe. But there's a difference between believing something and knowing something. And I like to draw a line between those two things. So, you know, when it comes to belief, I just, you know, in terms of God and spirituality and all that, I simply say, personally, I don't know. And I think that's pretty much not only the safest road to take, but it's the most certain, that I just don't know. And I don't know when it comes to matters of God. I don't think it's possible to know. And I think that people who take these extreme viewpoints, one or the other, there is no God, you know, sort of the militant atheist view. There's no God, and you're wrong for believing in one. And the militant fundamentalist, there is a God, and you must believe, or you're going to hell, and you're, you know, burning in damnation and hellfire and all that. I think both of those extremes are completely off the rails. I don't see any reason for people to be that solid about their beliefs that they feel like they need to enforce them on me or anybody else. I just don't see the point in doing that. It doesn't seem to make any sense. And violence and all of that is just ludicrous. So that's my take on that. Fair-based Messiah. Is the point when initial Scientology indoctrination clashes with reasonable doubt that active Scientologists become responsible for the abuse? Okay, this is an important question and one I'd like to address straight on. I think people are always responsible for the abuse. I don't think there's some point where a person's not responsible if they're beating on somebody or abusing others or stalking and harassing them or taking their money, cheating them out of, you know, credit cards, something like that. A person's always responsible for doing that, regardless of what their beliefs were or what somebody else told them. They did those things, and they need to take responsibility for those things and deal with the consequences of those things. And on that note, I'll say that personally, I did some things in Scientology that I didn't think were very, very nice, very correct. And I took efforts when I got out and saw that to make restitution, to make amends for that, to reach out to those people that I had harmed and apologize or try to at least, you know, do something, say something about it. And I feel that everybody who comes out of Scientology has some, you know, who's done something that they feel bad about or feel wrong about, or that if they abused people or something, I feel that they need to do something about that. They need to take some responsibility for that. So that's so my answer to the question is that a person is always responsible for their actions, and I don't think Scientologists are any more entitled to a Nuremberg defense than anybody else. You know, in Nuremberg trials, you know, after World War II, they found that the Nazi officers who had carried out atrocities, or the judges who had judged people to, you know, and sent them to concentration camps and whatnot, they were responsible for what they did. You didn't get away with, I was ordered to do it, so it wasn't, not on me, you know, no, they were responsible, and I think Scientologists should be held to that same standard. Amy Skiba, do you have any ill feelings towards Mike Rinder or Marty Rathbun, or do you feel that they were caught up in the culture of a cult and not responsible for the harm they caused so many? Also, do you think that Tommy Davis will ever come out publicly against Scientology? Okay, so kind of like what I just said, I do feel that Mike and Marty are responsible for their actions just like anybody else is. And I don't have any ill will towards them. And I'll tell you the reason I don't. While I just said everything I said about, you know, persons being responsible for their actions, I also am going to say this. I don't have any judgment about people who are in Scientology and come out of Scientology, and now they're not in it anymore, like Mike and Marty or so many other people. I don't go blame, shame, and regret on those people. I wasn't personally harmed by Mike and Marty, so, you know, maybe I don't have a dog in that race specifically, but there are certainly people who have come out of Scientology that I had known while I was in Scientology who did me wrong, and I don't have anything on it, because having come out of that culture and that cult, I know where their heads were at. And I don't blame them for it. I'm not on some big like judgment roll against people who come out of their own accord. You know, when you come out of Scientology of your own accord, you come to your senses, you look around, you go, oh my God, what was I doing? What I've seen is that those people tend to beat themselves up way more than anybody else is going to beat them up. And generally are extremely contrite and extremely sorry for things that they did. That's the people I've spoken to and reached out to. That's what I've encountered. So I don't play the blame game with them. And I do understand people who have, you know, been harmed more than I was by them playing the blame game. I don't get into that. I don't try to step in the middle of those disputes or those situations because it's not really my place. So that's my answer to that question. As far as do I think Tommy Davis is ever going to speak out publicly, don't know. I don't know the guy. I know right now he's not. I wish he would. I wish he would, kind of snap too. But his mother is a hardcore Scientologist and celebrity. His dad is also a celebrity of his own kind as a TV producer and is also a hardcore Scientologist. So his wife is connected to the Feshbach family, who are all Scientologists. So Tommy Davis has lots of reasons not to speak out publicly or not to contemplate doing that, and that's up to him as to what he's going to do with that, but I don't see it happening. So, Billy Mathis. Love watching your videos, Chris. Well done. I found you due to my somewhat obsession with learning everything there is to know about Scientology. I've never studied LRH or his writing, but I find cults very interesting and perplexing. My question is more about faith in general. Do you think organized religion, whatever it may be, is helpful or more hurtful to our society? I think spirituality is important for our souls. I'm not going to tell people what they should or shouldn't believe, but from my viewpoint, organized religions are hypocritical and use faith to further their agendas, and have led to the death of millions. I'm curious to hear what your opinion might be. Well, Billy, basically, I couldn't agree with you more. I think religion as a term falls into three categories or three things. I think there's religious belief. I think there's religious practice, which is what an individual will do to show his belief. And then I think there's organized religion, which is when you get more than one person together and they start, you know, organizing up into groups, and you get these churches and revivals and mass congregations and things like that. And I think these things go way out of control really fast. Personally, I don't have any problem with religion. I don't have any problem with belief or faith. I think everybody's going to have religious belief, regardless of what I think about it. Anyway, I think everybody's got religious belief, even if they choose to. Their religious belief is that they have no belief, that there is no God. Great, that's a religious belief. I think that the consequences of religious groups, of organized religion, outweighs the benefit of them personally. That's my in a historical context, that's what I think. I've certainly got lots of history to back me up on that. Lots of abuses, lots of individuals who have taken power over organized religious groups and used that to further their own agendas, further their own ends. And I think it's inherently dangerous. Do I think they should all be outlawed? No, I don't know that that's the solution. I think education is a much brighter solution to that. And I think we're actually moving in that direction with the proliferation of knowledge through the internet and through the information age that we're in now. I think, statistically speaking, I've read studies that show that the percentage of people who actually go to church or are part of organized religion is going down. I think that percentage is going down. I think that's a direct reflection of a dissemination and widespread availability of knowledge that is available, because I think religious, I think some religion is based in ignorance of science and nature and knowledge, and that with knowledge comes understanding, and with understanding comes less of a need for religious belief. So that's sort of my very summary take on it. But yeah, Billy, I agree with you that organized religion has not necessarily proven to be, historically speaking, a force for good, and I'm not too into it. But I say that in the same breath that I say I'm not against anybody's personal belief system. And if you can see the logic of what I'm talking about there, then you'll understand my position. Okay, so that's all the questions I'm going to answer for this week for critical Q&A number 3. Thank you very much for sending me questions, and leave your comments here and your questions for me in the comments section, and I will continue to collect them, and I'm getting to them as fast as I can, and I will continue to try to pump these out every week. Thank you very much for watching. I really appreciate you subscribing and being a part of this and listening to what I have to say. All right. So thank you for watching, and I'll see you next time.